Vikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vikatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking on, well, a really significant piece of work, the Annals by the Roman historian Publius Cornelius Tacitus.
It's definitely significant. And for you listening, this isn't just a history lesson about emperors long gone.
No, not at all. It's more like getting into the weeds of power, how it works, how it corrupts, and why that still matters so much today.
Exactly. Tacitus forces us to ask this fundamental question. What happens? What's the real price when you trade political freedom, actual civic virtue, for just stability, or what looks like stability?
Yeah, he's essentially performing a kind of moral autopsy on the early Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the Julio-Claudian emperors, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero.
And charting this seemingly unstoppable slide into moral decay driven by absolute power.
It's quite the story.
So before we jump into the, frankly, often grim details of the reigns themselves, maybe we should talk about the man writing it. Who exactly was Tacitus?
Okay, so Tacitus, he lived roughly from AD 56 to 120. And the key thing to grasp is, he wasn't some academic detached from it all.
Right, he was deep inside the system.
Totally. A senator, held major offices, quaestor, praetor. He was even consul in AD 97, governed the province of Asia. He knew how the Roman political machine worked from the inside out.
So he had access. Access to records, to the talk, the gossip, the real stories circulating among the elite.
Unparalleled access. But what really gives his writing its edge, its psychological depth, is his own experience.
Yeah.
He lived and served under Emperor Domitian.
Who was known for being pretty tyrannical, right?
No, absolutely. A reign of terror, essentially. Surviving that, seeing how fear and suspicion operate under an autocrat, it just fundamentally shaped his view.
You can feel that distrust of absolute power on almost every page, can't you?
You really can. It gives his history this sharp, almost modern feel. He understood the fear, the way people had to watch what they said, the self-censorship. It's chilling.
Okay, so let's talk about the Annals itself. It covers the period from the death of Augustus in AD 14 up to Nero's death in 68, year by year. What's the big argument he's making across those decades?
Well, the core idea is that the system Augustus set up, the Principate, which looked like it preserved the Republic,
It
actually systematically killed liberty.
Bit by bit.
Yeah, gradually but inevitably. He shows how concentrating power in one person just unleashes the worst aspects of human nature. Paranoia, cruelty, unchecked ambition. It poisons everything.
And the Senate's role in this, it's quite a depressing picture he paints.
Oh, it's central to his critique. This body, once the heart of the Republic, just devolves into this group of, well, yes men, sycophants, terrified for their lives.
Survival becomes the only goal, not governing.
Exactly. And you see this decline mirrored in the emperors themselves. You start with Tiberius, who's all about keeping up appearances, you know, pretending the Republic is still alive while he grabs the reins.
Then we skip Caligula because those books are lost, sadly, or maybe not so sadly, given his reputation.
Oh, maybe. Then you get to Claudius, who Tacitus paints as, well, intelligent but easily led, dominated by his wives and his powerful advisors, his freedmen.
And it all spirals down to Nero. The final spectacle of corruption and really madness.
Right. Tacitus isn't that focused on, say, economic policy or military strategy. He's laser focused on the moral drama.
How power twists people, not just the emperor, but everyone living under that shadow.
Yeah, the whole society.
Okay, this is where we need to get into some of the specific stories, because they are incredibly memorable and illustrate his points so powerfully. Let's start with Tiberius, books 1-6. Tacitus kicks things off with Tiberius's accession, this charade of reluctance.
Yes, it's brilliant. Tiberius puts on this big show. Oh, I couldn't possibly handle this immense burden. The empire is too vast for one man.
Standard political theater, maybe.
Well, yes, but Tacitus sees right through it. He portrays it as masking this deep, suspicious hunger for power. And for Tacitus, that very act of pretending, of lying about ambition from the start, it signals the end of honest politics, the end of liberty.
And then there's Germanicus, Tiberius's nephew and adopted son. He seems to represent everything Tiberius isn't.
Exactly. Germanicus is the ideal Roman, in many ways popular, virtuous, a successful general, genuinely loved. He's the foil to Tiberius.
Which, of course, makes him dangerous to a suspicious emperor.
Hugely dangerous. His popularity is a threat. Tacitus heavily implies, he basically points the finger, saying Tiberius was behind Germanicus's mysterious death out in the eastern provinces. Poisoned.
Wow. So the death of the good man, the virtuous alternative.
It's the death of hope, in a way. And if virtue is eliminated, what rushes in to fill the vacuum? Ambition without scruples. Enter Sejanus.
Sejanus, the Praetorian prefect, the Emperor's right-hand man. Tell us about his rise and fall.
Sejanus is Tacitus's case study in how tyranny breeds monsters. First, he centralizes the Praetorian Guard, the Emperor's bodyguards, right outside Rome, makes him a real power base.
Smart move, politically.
Oh, very. Then he starts clearing the field. He poisons Tiberius's own son, Drusus. He goes after Germanicus's widow and sons. He builds his influence through fear and, well, murder.
But Tiberius isn't stupid. He's just paranoid.
Exactly. Tiberius, hiding away on Capri, starts to see Sejanus himself as the biggest threat. So he orchestrates this incredible downfall, turns the tables, denounces Sejanus publicly, and unleashes a purge. It's dramatic stuff.
And underpinning all this fear and backstabbing is a legal change Tacitus really flags, right? The treason law, maestas.
Yes, this is crucial. A law that was originally about protecting the state gets twisted into a weapon for personal vendettas.
Anything could be treason. A stray remark, not showing enough enthusiasm.
Precisely. It creates this pervasive climate of terror where accusation equals guilt and justice is completely politicized. Informers flourish. It's how autocrats control the elite.
Chilling. Okay, let's shift gears to the later books, 11 to 16. We get Claudius, who you said was weak-willed, and this is where the imperial women really step onto the stage.
Oh, absolutely. Claudius's reign is almost defined by the women around him. First, there's Messalina, his third wife.
Her scandals were legendary, weren't they?
Off the charts. Tacitus describes her affairs and ambition, culminating in this utterly audacious act. She actually goes through a public marriage ceremony with another senator while Claudius is out of town.
It's bold.
Bold doesn't quite cover it. It forces Claudius's advisors to step in and have her executed. But then who steps into the vacuum?
Alipina the Younger, Nero's mother.
Right, and she is portrayed as far more cunning, far more politically astute, and ultimately far more dangerous. She marries her uncle, Claudius.
Which was already controversial.
Very. Then she persuades him to adopt her son, Nero, putting him ahead of Claudius's own son, Britannicus. And then Tacitus gives us that unforgettable detail.
The mushrooms.
The poison mushrooms. Served to Claudius, clearing the way for Nero to become emperor. She essentially engineers his rise to power.
So Nero takes the throne. His early reign, the Quinquennium Neronis, is supposed to be relatively okay.
Guided by Seneca, the philosopher, and Burrus, the Praetorian prefect, yes. There's a veneer of good governance for about 5 years. But Tacitus shows the darkness underneath from the start, one of Nero's first acts.
Getting rid of the competition.
Poisoning Britannicus.
Yeah.
Claudius's son, his own stepbrother. Just like that.
And his relationship with his mother, Agrippina, who basically put him on the throne, that deteriorates badly.
Spectacularly. He resents her influence once you're gone, which leads to one of the most infamous stories in the annals.
The collapsing boat plot?
Yes. He designs this special boat meant to fall apart at sea and drown her. Unbelievably elaborate. But she survives, swims ashore.
So he just sends assassins to finish the job. Matricide.
Matricide. A crime that shocked even the Roman elite, who'd seen quite a lot by then. It marks a point of no return for Nero.
And then comes the Great Fire of Rome in AD 64. Huge disaster.
Massive. Tacitus is careful. He reports the rumor that Nero started it, maybe to clear space for his palace, the Golden House. But he doesn't definitively say Nero did it.
But he's very clear about Nero's reaction.
Oh, yes. Needing a scapegoat to deflect public anger,
He
blames Christians.
A small, relatively unknown group at the time. Easy target.
Exactly. And the persecution Tacitus describes is horrific. He talks about them being covered in animal skins, torn apart by dogs.
And burned alive as human torches.
To light up Nero's garden parties. It's just stomach-churning cruelty. And the reign ends in a spiral of conspiracies, like the Pisonian conspiracy.
It fails.
Leading to more executions and forced suicides, including Nero's old tutor, Seneca, philosopher who tried and ultimately failed to restrain the monster he had shape.
What a trajectory. Okay, let's pull back a bit. If we look at this whole narrative, what are the big overarching themes or messages Tacitus is driving home beyond just power corrupts?
Well, that's certainly number one, the corrosive effect of absolute power. It doesn't just make rulers bad. It makes them paranoid, isolated, eventually detached from reality. Tiberius hiding on Capri, Nero performing on stage.
It degrades them as human beings.
Absolutely. Theme two is definitely the collapse of the Senate. It's a study in institutional decay. How fear makes people complicit, how they choose survival over principle. Libertas, that Roman ideal of liberty, just evaporates.
Which ties into the third theme you mentioned earlier, this idea of the illusion of freedom.
Mm-hmm. keeping the old forms, the Senate meets, elections happen, but it's all hollow, a performance.
Yeah.
Tacitus is brilliant at dissecting this kind of counterfeit freedom, where nothing is what it seems and speaking truth is impossible.
That must have been psychologically exhausting for people living through it.
Incredibly damaging. And a fourth theme, maybe less obvious but crucial, is the role of these imperial women. Livia, Messalina, Agrippina, they wield enormous influence, often ruthlessly, because the normal political paths are closed or distorted by the autocracy.
Power finds a way, even if it's through intrigue and poison.
It certainly does in the annals.
Tacitus's writing style itself is so memorable. It's dense, sharp, cynical. And it's given us some incredibly famous quotes, or at least crystallizations of political ideas.
Absolutely. His Latin is famously concise and, well, biting.
Let's share a few. I'll start with one that always feels relevant. The more corrupt the state, the more numerous the laws.
Oof. Yeah, that hits home, doesn't it? It suggests that when the underlying morality or consensus breaks down, governments just try to regulate everything with more and more rules.
But it doesn't fix the core problem. It might even become part of the problem, like the treason law.
Exactly. It's often a symptom, not a cure. Okay, how about this one? His devastating critique of Roman expansion and the so-called Pax Romana. They rob, kill, and plunder, and this they call empire. And where they make a desert, they call it peace.
Wow, that just cuts right through the propaganda, doesn't it? Peace through utter destruction.
It shows his deep cynicism about the whole imperial project. The peace is just the silence after the violence.
Okay, one more. This feels like the psychological engine driving the whole narrative. The lust for power, for dominating others, inflames the heart more than any other passion.
Yep, that's the core diagnosis, isn't it? For Tacitus, this lust overrides everything, reason, morality, family ties. It's the ultimate destructive force in politics.
So bringing this back to today, why should someone listening now care about these Roman emperors and their struggles from 2,000 years ago? What are the real life applications?
Well, firstly, the Annals is just a masterclass in why checks and balances matter. It's exhibit A for what happens when power isn't constrained.
It shows the inevitable slide.
The slide into paranoia, oppression, arbitrary rule. So it's a powerful reminder to value and protect those systems in our own societies. You know, independent courts, free press, real legislative power.
It also helps us become more critical consumers of politics, doesn't it? Recognizing the theater.
Definitely. Tacitus teaches you to look past the spin. The public performances, the carefully crafted images, the control of information. It was happening then, it happens now. He gives you a lens to analyze modern political rhetoric.
To ask, okay, what's really going on behind the facade?
Exactly. And maybe the toughest lesson is about complicity. The Senate's weakness is a mirror. It forces you to think about courage, about speaking truth to power, and how easily societies can drift towards tyranny if people just stay silent to protect themselves.
It's uncomfortable but necessary reflection.
Very.
So, final thoughts. What was the most surprising or striking thing for you revisiting the Annals for this discussion?
For me, it's always the psychological acuity, how deeply Tacitus seems to understand the inner lives of these figures, the fear, the ambition, the resentment. It feels incredibly modern in that sense. The story of Agrippina, for instance, is just timeless political drama.
Yeah, I agree. That really stands out. And the final warning feels incredibly potent, too, that freedom isn't the default state. It's fragile.
Mm-hmm. It needs constant vigilance. That's the ultimate lesson, I think. The Annals is this stark, unflinching look at how power tests human nature and how often human nature fails that test.
It forces you to confront some pretty dark truths about politics and power.
Which is precisely why it's still so valuable, so essential, even after 2 millennia.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.